CBSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. Sri Lanka, a large and beautiful island from pictures off the coast of India. This is the Indo-Pacific, the developing basin for the 21st century. And the challenges of that development include China and India and their dispute, but also the island state of Sri Lanka, a.k.a. Ceylon, once upon a time. Writing about the troubles that now include headlines such as shoot on sight is Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes for the Wall Street Journal editorial board about the Indian Ocean Basin and the challenges. Why mobs are torching Sri Lanka's politicians' homes is the eye-catching headline. Sadanand, a very good evening to you. Shoot on sight, torching homes. We're looking at what appears to be in the capital, Colombo, a revolt. Who are the Rajapaksas? The prime minister's name Mahinda. I understand he has a large family. And how did they get into this trouble? I stopped paying attention after they solved the Tamil Tigers more than a decade ago. Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Let me do a quick recap. You're absolutely right. Sri Lanka is in the midst of an unprecedented crisis, in many ways an even greater crisis than the crisis that they faced during 26 years of a civil war between the Sinhalese-dominated government and ethnic Tamil separatists. What's happened in a nutshell is that over the last two decades, politics in Sri Lanka has been dominated by this very charismatic family, this clan called the Rajapaksas. The leader of the clan was the former prime minister. He just stepped down last week, Mahinda Rajapaksa, who was the person responsible for winning the civil war. He came to power in 2005 and ruled for 10 years till 2015. His brother is currently president, and until a week ago, he was the prime minister. And what the Rajapaksas have presided over is a lot of reckless borrowing, including from the Chinese. And essentially, they have taken what was widely seen as South Asia's model country in the sense of being both democratic and relatively economically developed. And they have basically taken it to ruin. And right now, the Sri Lankans find that they have no money for fuel. They have no money for medicines. They have they have electricity blackouts. You know, we talk about some of the problems we're facing here in the U.S. with, you know, gas prices and baby formula shortages. But what they're facing in Sri Lanka is many, many, many times worse in terms of what the citizens are going through. And a lot of it has to do with the Rajapaksa clan and their ideology of Buddhist nationalism, which we can talk about a little bit more.
Yes. I want to pay attention, however, to the details. Is this the pandemic? Is this recovery? You note that the Chinese have made loans that are going to be difficult to repay. We've seen that in other countries. So is this the pandemic meets China's Belt and Road, meets bad decision-making over a decade? In other words, a combination of events, not one driver.
Oh, absolutely. And then the way I explain it in my column is that, you know, it's a combination of bad luck and bad policies. So if you look at the bad luck part, Sri Lanka had a very large tourism-dependent economy. And, you know, it was, you know, often came up in Western magazines and newspapers as one of the best places to visit. And then the pandemic hit. And when the pandemic hit, they basically lost more than 90% of their tourists overnight because people weren't flying and they weren't going to spend their money in Sri Lankan resorts. So that hit them very hard. The fuel prices have increased after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and that has, of course, hit them very hard again because they almost 100% of their petroleum is imported, and 60% of it is refined outside of their country. So those two things really, it had nothing to do with the Rajapaksas, right? Any government would have been hit. But the Rajapaksas also did some really foolish things. Firstly, as you've talked about, they went on in this borrowing spree. They borrowed from the Chinese, but not only from the Chinese. They built these expensive vanity projects, including an airport and a port near the southern coast of the country, which had no real reason for being built there except that they were near the ancestral village of the Rajapaksas. I have taken a helicopter and flown over that airport and that port, John, And I've never before in my life seen a massive international airport without a single plane there, because it was just being, it was disused. There was no reason for people to fly there. So that was part of the problem. And then last year they did something pretty wacky where they suddenly decided overnight that all their farmers would have to switch from synthetic fertilizers and pesticides to organic farming. And this has turned out to be a complete catastrophe. It affected the rice crop, which is the staple. There are rice eaters in Sri Lanka. It affected the tea crop, which is their second largest export. And all of this just came from sort of, you know, from the fact that this family has had almost dictatorial rule, even though they're elected. And it means that no one was able to push back and question their really bad decisions.
The really bad decisions can be driven also by back-scratching, influence peddling. Do the Chinese have an outsized effect upon the Rajapaksas? There's a story in the Indo-Pacific, you know very well, the Solomon Islands, and there are questions raised about the Chinese saying, we're going to build this stadium, or we're going to build this building for you. Did that happen in, with the Rajapaksas making promises over this last decade?
Right, and that absolutely, and that port and the airport are the emblematic examples of this. And we get a sense of how the Chinese operate throughout the region. I mean, what they do is they go to politicians. I'm going to simplify this, and I'm going to be a little bit crude. I hope your listeners will forgive me. But what the Chinese do is they go into a country and they basically figure out who they need to bribe. And they will offer them a big contract, and they'll say that, well, how about, do you want a railway line, or do you want a port, or do you want an airport? And the politician says yes, and the Chinese say, well, okay, here it is, and we're going to put an inflated price tag on it, and guess what? You get to keep 10% or 5% or whatever of that contract is, and the debt goes to the government. And so this proves to be extremely attractive to various despots in many of these countries. And it puts them in, it puts their people in real trouble because, you know, the leaders who make these decisions and agree to these cozy deals with the Chinese are not the people who end up with the debt. It's their people who end up with the debt.
Is there a way out? There is a new prime minister who is an old prime minister. I believe that he's been in our office several times, maybe five times. Is that a way forward? Is the IMF a way forward? Is there help for, because the photographs show disorder in Colombo.
There is a way forward, and I think there's going to have to be a reckoning. They are leading already quite heavily on India. They're going to also have to lead on the IMF, the Japanese. They're probably going to ask the Chinese for some kind of debt relief. And I think the Sri Lankans will have to go back to the drawing board and recognize that they cannot get into these massive infrastructure projects that have no economic rationale, and they have to learn to live within their means. So there's a lot of sort of soul searching and hard thinking that the Sri Lankans are going to have to go through after this.
What does this mean for Delhi? Is this a concern? Does Delhi see this as a Chinese attempt to surround Delhi with bad actors?
So Delhi, as you know, and John, as we've discussed several times, is, you know, they are very concerned about growing Chinese influence in what the Indians regard as their own backyard. And Sri Lanka, in many cases, along with Nepal, is the emblematic example of this. And what you've seen now happen is that the Indians have moved in quite fast, and they have kind of tried, you know, they're trying to make a point to the Sri Lankans that, look, when push comes to shove, we're the ones who are next door to you, and we're the ones who are going to help you. And so they've helped with more than $3.5 billion of assistance in various forms. But in the end, there's a limit to what India can do too. I mean, it can't simply underwrite Sri Lanka's fuel bills well into the future. And I think what the Indians are going to demand of any future Sri Lankan dispensation is that they be much more careful in their engagements with the Chinese. Now, it remains to be seen whether the Sri Lankans listen or not, but that, I think, would be a logical and sensible Indian demand from Colombo.
Do the Rajapaksas need to step aside? Is there a solution without them?
Well, the Mahinda has already stepped aside, who was the prime minister and the former president and the more powerful and charismatic of the brothers. He has not only stepped aside, but he's rumored to be in hiding in a military base because he is so unpopular, there was a worry that a mob might lynch him. His brother, Gotha, is still president, hanging on to office by the skin of his teeth. But I think at this level of crisis, it may just be the end of the Rajapaksa's career. My own view is that if it should happen democratically. These are people who were popular and were elected by the people of Sri Lanka. But this may be an opportunity for the people of Sri Lanka to recognize that the Rajapaksa's brand of charismatic leadership and their ideology of Buddhist nationalism really doesn't offer solutions for day-to-day problems.
Sadanan Dume of the Wall Street Journal editorial page, writing about Sri Lanka, far away, but the problems are recognizable in the recovery from the pandemic and the Belt and Road episodes of these last decades. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.